This is Courage to Resist, bringing you the voices of the troops who refuse to fight. Benjamin Hart Vigis joined the U.S. Army in 2001, immediately after the events of 9/11. He was eager to fight against those he saw as America's enemies. Hart spent a little less than a year in Iraq, and on his return experienced some symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. Little by little, he began to rethink his support for the war, and eventually realized that he was a conscientious objector. He was honorably discharged from the military in 2004, and today is a member of Iraq Veterans Against the War. Hart spoke to Courage to Resist from his home in Austin, Texas. Hart, thank you so much for talking with Courage to Resist today.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, yeah.
Now, when did you join the Army?
I went into the military November 1st, 2001. I joined because of September 11th.
So you were really affected by the events of 9/11.
So I was. It was. I felt that I needed to contribute to a solution, and I felt that the way that I could best do that was join the military. And I mean, ever since my youth growing up, I always promised myself if America was ever invaded or attacked, I would join the military.
And how old were you when you joined up?
I was 26 when I joined. I was living in Seattle, Washington, Kirkland to be more exact, and I was managing a restaurant at the time. I was learning to play the bass, making music with my friends. Just bought a new car. I was living a pretty good life.
So you gave up a lot to join the Army.
You could say that. I definitely made the transition in my life when I joined. It was something that I felt right about at the time.
And did you request the infantry?
Yes. When I walked into the recruiting office on September 12th, 2001, I asked for infantry and airborne, and I was ended up with the 82nd Airborne Division, 1st 325 HHC Battalion Mortars. I was a mortarman.
Where did you go to basic training?
I went to basic training in Fort Benning, and that's where I also went, had my AIT and jump school.
You were in basic training with a lot of men and women who were considerably younger than you were.
I remember a drill sergeant came up to me and looked me in the face and said, "You're an old man, aren't you?" Didn't know really how to respond. Said, "Yes, drill sergeant."
And how did it feel to be there with people who were several years younger?
It didn't really feel that odd to me. It was just a slight difference in my point of view at the time.
And how was jump school for you?
Jump school was pretty easy for me. I mean, we just left basic training, so we were all in pretty good shape, and it's what I signed on to do, jump out of airplanes. But I really wasn't expecting the feeling that would come when you're at the door. I actually got pushed out the door my first jump as I walked down the line, airborne, shuffled, and all that, and made my turn to the door and thought to myself, "Oh my God, what did I get myself into?" And then, boosh, I went. You're supposed to say 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 for your to count. To your main parachute opens up, and I think I said or thought to myself, "Oh my God, I'm going to die! Oh my God, I'm going to die! Oh my God, I'm going to die! Oh my God, I'm going to die!" And the chute opened up, and oh my God, I'm going to live! Oh my God, I'm going to live! And When I landed, I looked up in the sky and saw the bird that I jumped out of, and just couldn't believe what I just did. And then I was definitely hooked to at least jumping out of airplanes.
Now, all this time during basic and AIT and jump school, did you maintain your intense conviction and commitment to fighting against Al Qaeda or whoever else the government identified as an enemy of America?
Yes, I was very motivated all throughout my training. Even when I got to my unit, I was motivated.
So you really wanted to see combat. How long was it before you were sent overseas?
the whole build-up to the war in Iraq, you know, I wasn't paying attention to anything of the sort. I mean, it was kind of on our mind of, you know, if we were going to go to Afghanistan, because that's where I initially thought I was going to be. But eventually it came down that we were being deployed, and when the detail that came back from delivering the trucks to the shipyard, they said that the package, you know, said that the trucks were going to Kuwait. So that's when we knew pretty definitely that we were going to be going to Iraq.
And this was after the war broke out, or in the build-up to the war?
In the build-up to the war. I was deployed to Kuwait in February 2003.
And from there, what happened?
Well, we were there for about a month training up and planning to jump into Baghdad Airport. And it was said that we weren't going to jump our trucks, so we would have to find our coffins where we had our mortar systems in, to break them out and then move about with a piece of mortar equipment strapped to our rucksack. So we trained as that, you know, running around the camp there in Kuwait. And I was lucky enough to have the base plate on my rucksack. It was kind of a balanced, even weight, but still the weight of our load was probably close to 100 pounds. And I would find a way to get up with the heavy rucksack by just flipping over on my chest, doing a push-up and throwing a knee up and kind of just doing a squat up. And with this, you know, my knee kind of had a reemergence of an old injury that I didn't tell the Army because I wanted to be airborne. You know, back in high school, I hyperextended my knee and tore some cartilage, and, you know, the knee was that same knee there in Kuwait was blowing up the size of a cantaloupe, and it was getting pretty painful. I was basically hiding that injury from that training because I wanted to jump. You know, I felt that I didn't want to be held back for any other reason. You know, my plan was just basically jump and most likely bust my leg and then just aim for anyone who didn't have nods on their helmet.
So in spite of this knee injury, you were still gung-ho about going into Iraq and joining the battle.
Yeah, do my job. But my sergeant saw that I was walking funny, and he asked me what was going on, and I basically told him that I didn't want to be held back. So he just took me to the medics, and without any paperwork, you know, they gave me some anti-inflammatory pills and just told me to stay off the leg for a while. So I was pretty much stuck to my bunk on the tent.
And what happened?
But, you know, my knee healed up, and, you know, our plan changed. You know, Third ID was ahead of schedule, and they already took Baghdad, so they scratched our jump into Baghdad Airport. And then when we heard the 173rd out of Vicenza jumped into northern Iraq, we were all pretty pissed. You know, we wanted a jump, get our mustard stain, so to speak, our little part of our gold cluster on our wings to say that we jumped in a combat area. But instead, we unloaded all our mortar systems and everything that we were going to jump and got our trucks out. And then we drove in March 2003 to southern Iraq. And that was a bit of experience. You know, the first Iraqi I ever saw was a dead man sitting in a passenger seat of a car near the border. It's kind of like an SUV type truck, you know, painted in what, you know, we later found out to be taxi colors. You know, people who would paint their cars just orange and white, you know, were marked as taxis. I just saw him kind of lean back, you know, bullet holes on the car, and nice welcome to Iraq sign.
And what kind of impact did that have on you?
Well, that just kind of really sharpened my mind even more of knowing that I am going into war. You know, we were all psyching ourselves up for it. You know, I mean, that whole mentality of really trying to dehumanize people. When we actually started back at Bragg, when we knew we were being deployed, one of our guys in our platoon found a video of Chechen soldiers chopping off the heads of Russians. And there was two particular videos that we watched multiple times. You know, one with sound, one without sound, but they were morbid, to say the least.
Where did you ultimately wind up in Iraq?
Well, the first town we went to was in the south called Asamawa. It was a town that Third ID's supply line was getting hit pretty fairly often from there, so we were assigned to go and take that town. And
did you see combat right away when you got to your duty station?
Well, when we came up to Asamawa, they positioned us in this, covered-up trash dump. You know, the sand was, if you dig not too far down, you'll find trash. And this was about outside town, about a mile or two, you could definitely see the outline of the town. And then one morning, the line companies, they marched into the town, and that's, when the fighting started. You could hear firefights all day long, and we'd get fire missions to fire mortars into the town, and we'd see, Kiowa attack helicopter shooting missiles, saw F-18 drop, biggest bomb that I ever heard, go off, saw, at nighttime, the Spectre gunships, these C-130s, equipped with artillery guns and these super Gatling guns. I don't know the nomenclature for those, but just looked like a streak of white lightning of bullets raining down, and hearing the artillery rounds shoot off, just pounding the city. And then after we, killed enough people from that, we moved into the town, and it's just a bit unreal just to see the amount of destruction in the city. I saw dogs fighting, donkeys fighting, birds fighting in the sky. It really seemed like the violence from humans fighting just kind of spread out to the rest of the life that lived there. And we ended up taking this abandoned hospital that seemed to have been turned into like a training ground for the Fedayeen, and posted up there inside the town, and had walls in the backyard, and it was basically pretty quiet from there. We never got attacked, but maybe 500 meters out, there was these huge tanks, and every once in a while you see someone go over there and kind of work in the tanks and come out with these buckets. And after about a week, I guess the rest of the town caught on, and there was this huge line getting whatever from these huge tanks, and we found out that they were taking gasoline. It was a huge deposit of gas, and since we were the closest unit to it, we were ordered to stop them. And we were one of the trucks that rolled out there, and as people were coming out with these cans of gasoline, I remember one of my sergeants, raised his rifle and, with his Texan accent, said, "Arme Salahak," which is drop your weapon in Arabic. But, I told the sergeant, you're telling him to drop his weapon. He doesn't have any. And he said, "Well, he knows what he means. He knows what I mean." Luckily, no one got shot that day. But it just kind of seemed a bit odd to me to see the poverty of that town and what it went through, and to think that, if they just went through 30 years under Saddam, they should at least deserve free gas. But I didn't really question my orders at the time. It wasn't my job to.
Were you questioning those orders in your own mind?
Oh, I was questioning that action, but not the war itself. In there in Asamawa, guys would come up to our position with one ear and thank us for being there. It's because this man refused to fight for Saddam, so they took an ear. And there was a good amount of cheering and waving to us. Yes, Bush, no Saddam. We would hear from kids and people. And so, I was still feeling like we were doing good then. So we were there for about a month. We moved to a different position, closer in town, or really in town, and came up to a position where we saw a destroyed Humvee, and we knew what happened with it. It was an armor scout. And this was back when we were in the dump outside of town. Over the radio, we heard this, call for help, scream. screaming, we're hit, and apparently an armored scout went too far out in its position and got destroyed. I think a couple guys died in that truck, but seeing the truck right there crossing over to the bridge where it was attacked from, and seeing the burnt-out Iraqi truck, which I guess was hit by a missile of some sort, taking up that position where they killed those armor scouts, was a bit eerie. But, you know, we were right there on the Euphrates.
And did you lose any friends?
Not on that deployment, no. The second tour to Iraq for my platoon, I was not on. My roommate, Mercado, was killed September 1st.
So how long were you in Iraq altogether, Hart?
I was in Iraq for about 10 and a half months, full deployment, 11 and a half months, you know.
And during that time, did you ever start rethinking what you were doing there and what the U.S. was doing there?
Not really. It was, you know, I was just trying to gather my happy thoughts throughout that whole thing, and you know, what I deemed my happy thoughts were things that I could touch right there. You know, America basically disappeared in my mind. I broke up with my girlfriend at the time from there in Baghdad, and it just, you know, I would get letters every now and then, but I didn't think much of America. All I had were my puppy doggies, my Italian music videos, and my chocolate banana milk. If I had those things, I was good.
You had dogs?
Yeah, dogs. I love dogs. And there's plenty of them there, mostly wild. You know, Iraqis don't really hold much regard for dogs. You know, shepherds would use them for their herd. But other than that, you know, platoons all over the place were adopting dogs for their platoon dog. It was just a really healthy thing for us. But this other post decided that dogs were a health risk, so they killed them all off. And there was talk that we were going to do that there at Arfa, but it never got implemented.
You came back to the States then after almost a year in the Middle East. And what happened when you were back at Fort Bragg? Did you start reflecting on your experiences in Iraq? What went on in your mind when you returned?
I learned that, you know, things kind of follow you home. You know, the first night we were back, you know, a couple of guys went straight to the strip club, and, you know, it was right before it closed, so. And coming back, there was this bag of trash on the side of the road, and I swerved my car away from it, nearly pretty much went into the oncoming lanes, but luckily there wasn't any traffic, so there was no car wreck, and pretty much everyone in the car was silent, and I remember Cosmo saying, "Hey, we're back in America, man." And I was like, "Yeah, I know. You don't need to tell me twice." But it's just that jerk reaction. I later, you know, learned it was post-traumatic stress. You know, learning these patterns of survival and helplessness modes that no longer really applied to what was going on here. But and you know, at that time, I just didn't know what was going on.
Did you get any psychological help?
Not till later, maybe like a year or two later. I didn't really search for help, but that was really, you know, met with resistance from the VA clinic here in Austin. In particular, Dr. Denny said that I didn't need help because I had too much positive stuff in my life. You know, he was talking about the peace movement that I was belonging to at that time.
This is the end of part one of an interview with Iraq veteran and conscientious objector Benjamin Hart Vigis.